Blog Talk Radio.
There is a conspiracy in the land. It's a conspiracy to wipe out the black community as a whole.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to log in, load up, and cop out. You would not be able to lose yourself in swag while sitting on your sofa sipping Ace of Spades, watching messages from the local sponsors, because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Scheinberg administration during an uncut broadcast of Schindler's List. It won't consist of Instagram pics posted by Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, and Ben Jealous eating dinner together at the juice bar on 125th Street showing off their current situation. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by New Nigga Cinema, and it will not star Nene or Flavor Flav, Cicely Tyson, or Tyler Perry. The revolution will not give you street cred. The revolution will not correct erectile dysfunction. The revolution will not make you an American Idol, because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Muhammad popping champagne at your going away to prison party, because you got caught by every camera in the neighborhood kicking that dog and robbing that old lady. CNN will not choose the dumbest eyewitness in the crowd to give a concise description of just what happened. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of brothers shooting down pigs on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of brothers shooting down pigs on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Gwyneth Paltrow being run out of Harlem on a Vespa with a brand new weave. There will be no slow motion or ass shots of Buffy the Body gyrating on a rented Rolls Royce with a wet black power t-shirt that she had been saving for just the proper occasion. Real Housewives, Olivia and French, and the Kardashians will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if niggas are making it rain in puddles of sorrow, because black people will be in the streets looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no YouTube clips of parrots singing the national anthem, or Sweet Brown screaming she ain't got time for that. The theme song will not be written by Kanye West or DJ Khaled, nor will it be sung by 2 Chainz, Nicki Minaj, Taylor Swift, or Trinidad James. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a flash flood, flash fire, or flash mob. You will not have to worry about the gecko in your glove compartment, the tapeworm in your gas tank, or the Trojan man in your back pocket. The revolution will not go better with coke. The revolution will not spray on a darker complexion. The revolution will give you wings. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution won't be on demand, brother. The revolution will be live.
Black power. Black power, power to the people. All power to the people. It's your brother, soldier in arms, comrade in battle, Sean Castro Kweli. Happy to be able to broadcast live once again to you from right here in the hills and smells of North America. And as always, it's a privilege, it's a joy, it's an honor, it's a blessing to be able to talk to you from this bold revolutionary radio broadcast called Black Power Radio, the Black Power Hour, the voice of truth here on Blog Talk Radio for black people and oppressed people worldwide, new Africans all over the planet, no matter where you're found. We represent for you indigenous people all over the planet. We're representing for you all over, for all over the planet. It's Monday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. You know how we bring it. Giving thanks to the Creator who answers to many different names. And I know we call on many different names out there. Of course, giving thanks to our beautiful ancestors, the original people of this planet, the mothers and fathers of civilization, all civilization, that is. Giving thanks to their genius, giving thanks to their scientific accomplishments, giving thanks to their mathematical precisions, giving thanks to their will and determination to rise against all odds and all obstacles, giving thanks to them for the hard times that they went through to push us forward as a people and to give us an example, a real live example of what we are to do in these times and in going forward. Giving thanks, of course, to all of our freedom fighters from the earliest moments of antiquity, those who met the European colonizer on the shores of Africa, our mother continent, those who dealt with the slave traders, those who dealt with those who set up the trading post, those who met up and faced Captain John Hawkins and the good ship Jesus of Lubeck, commissioned by the Queen of England, and all of those who fought from way back there to those who fought in the Caribbean, in the Isles of the Pacific, those who fought in the Haitian Revolution, Boukman, Dessalines, Toussaint Louverture, giving life to a black liberation movement in America, going back to the earliest days, Mr. Cuffy, and the earliest days, going down to the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey, and the earliest days of Carlos Cooks, giving thanks to all those great pioneers and those who made their way through television and film, and those who had to do things just to make it, took roles that even degraded some of their characters just to put food on the table. Thanks to the great musicians, the Coltranes and others. Thanks to those black women deep in the South who were scrubbing kitchen floors, those who were in the house taking care of the business under severe pressure, the black man who was doing the same, at times being used just like his woman as a sex object and a stud horse to mate for white women, degrading, being degraded, talked down to and talked about. The black man who had to carry heavy bales of hay and carry heavy equipment, didn't have sufficient clothes, didn't have sufficient food, didn't have sufficient shoes, stripped away just like the black woman at times from his family, from his children, stripped away from his kingliness, his royalty, stripped away, thanks to them for everything that they went through, those who fought back and organized amongst the slaves, organized rebellions for freedom, organized through the night rides, organized some who even got lynched and hung and castrated even, just so others could push on. The great warriors like Harriet Tubman and others who made the battle cry of freedom or death real, that there's no turning back once you take this path, once you take the liberation struggle path seriously, there's no going back. Once you leave the plantation, you cannot return, she said. And she had to blow some people away with her shotgun, blow some loved ones away with her shotgun, because if they turned back on their heels and retreated, they would give up the position of those who wanted freedom. Thanks to her, thanks to the greats like Shirley Chisholm, who ran for presidency in this country, had the educational prowess of a teacher, to educate and pull together the masses of our people to exercise true political vision and power. Thanks to the greats Carter G. Woodson, his authorship and scholarship, and his work with the miseducation of a Negro, other works, his scientific genius. Thanks to them. Thanks to so many. I mean, the list is so long. Thanks again to the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey and his demonstration of the UNIA, the United Negro Improvement Association, being the largest black organization to date on this soil. Contribution to our black revolution with the red, the black, and the green, a flag of our own in the early days, the red for the blood, the black for our people, and the green for the land. Thanks to him. Thanks for his defensive prowess. Thanks to his nationhood prowess and his stance of black nationalism. Africa for the Africans, at home and abroad. Thanks to him and his prowess of economic development and ushering in banks. Thanks to him and thanks to those who supported him. And woe to the betrayers and those who sold him out, as we have sellouts in this day. Thanks to Noble Drew Ali and his demonstration with the Morris Science Temple of America, who worked in his own way to bring an African spirituality to our people and to build another nation, nationhood, sovereignty, that in many cases has been corrupted, but he was on to something. Sovereignty, declaration of independence for indigenous people, Africans, here in the hills and smells of North America. A nationality card, chambers of reclaiming your own independence. Thanks to him. Thanks to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and his demonstration of the Nation of Islam. Thanks first to Mr. Farad Muhammad and then the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, continued on by the students like Minister Malcolm X at one point, continued today by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and the Honorable Silas Muhammad, and continued by other students of his great works. Thanks to them and the push towards agriculture and farming and land and development, the early days of banks and airports, jet planes, schools, independent schooling systems for our education to be taught by our own uniforms, flag to call our own, which represented the sun, moon, and stars of our universe as a people. Thanks to them. Thanks to those who continue in that name and in the work today. Thanks to all of the great, great, great formations, whether spiritual or non, the political formations, the revolutionary formations, like Lowndes County, Alabama, like SNCC, with the Honorable Kwame Ture and Imam Jamil Alameen, formerly H. Rap Brown, who we send our salutes and greetings to, locked down right now in Florence, Max. Salute to him and salute to them for their organizational efforts in the Deep South and throughout the country, taking all kind of pressure. Thanks to, of course, Max Stanford and his work with the Revolutionary Action Movement, or RAM, and his work with the early versions, along with Kwame Ture, of the Black Panther Party, the original Black Panther Party. Thanks to the works of course, Mukasa Ricks, formerly Willie Ricks, who pushed Black Power out there, and the cry and the rally cry for Black Power. Thanks, of course, those who took it up north, Mark Comfort, who moved the Panther up north and built and spread the Northern California chapter of the Black Panther Party, which lit a light up there. Those who helped to give the go-ahead and permission to two college students and two workers, Bobby Seale and Huey P. Newton, who built the Panther Party in Oakland, California, in the Bay Area, starting with just about six people, two at first to six people, for the life of little Bobby Hutton and others, we give thanks. We give thanks for all under that formation, all of the formations of the Black Liberation Army, all of those who are locked down right now, like Malika Shakur, Maliki Shakur Latin, in Clinton Correctional Facility, like Rochelle McGee, locked down in California State Prison. Of course, like Abdullah Majid, formerly Anthony Laborde, Panther, Black Liberation Army, Republic of New Africa, Hugo Pinnell, thanks to Ed Poindexter. Of course, Mutulu Shakur, the doctor, and Russell Maroon Schultz, and so many others that we could name, Albert Woodfox, and others who deserve our support and will receive our support, Herman Bale, and I mean, I could just go on, Sundiata Okoli, Mumia Abu-Jamal, the Move Movement. So many that deserve our worldwide support. Thanks to all of them. We give thanks to them because if we did not thank them, we wouldn't be who we are in terms of a movement in the 2000s, 2014, where many are afraid to start movements. Many are afraid to belong to movements. Many are afraid, timid, punked out to join movements, because they've seen how their enemies don't like you to be organized. They have seen how your oppressors, the beast, the devils, Satan, Beelzebubs, the Lucifers in human flesh and form don't like you to come amongst your own and work for self-determination, only work for their political goals and aspirations. And so they're timid because they've hooked themselves up to an illusion called an American dream. We're thankful for our start in 1989, when most of the other movements had been decimated by an onslaught of counterintelligence, where they caused disruption by infighting, using spies and provocateurs, setups and frame-ups to disband and disrupt the Black Power movement that had taken root and swept the country, and it began to take the minds and hearts of Black youth to another level of aspiration, that we wanted complete freedom and separation and self-determination, like the Republic of New Africa wanted to carve out some of this good earth to call our own. Marcus Garvey called out earth to call our own. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad called out earth to call our own. The Black Panther Party of yesterday called for a separate plebiscite territory to call our own, wanted complete change. Minister Malcolm X and the OAAU organized for complete change in territory and land for the Black man and Black woman to work off of and be separated to do for self. And so in 2014, when most have punked out and most have been counted out, most have sold out, most have been bought out, remember the old wrestler, the million-dollar man, Ted DiBiase, used to say, everybody has a price. Most have punked out in 2014. But there was some speckles of pantherhood left. The year that Minister and Dr. Huey P. Newton was assassinated, the panther was still fragmented. But the organizational spirit, the move, and as my comrades on the mother continent say, a lucha continua, the struggle continues. As the struggle had to continue, so continued the Panther movement. As we're taught down to the last man and last woman standing, one panther is trained to handle a thousand. And so that Panther movement in Dallas, Texas, rose up with the help of some original Panther members, original Panther Michael McGee from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and Alderman hooking up with a radio producer named Aaron Michaels, who organized and put that spirit back in the world, brought the brothers and sisters back together and went to the streets, attracting others, young and old, attracting them to fight for self-determination once again in a world full of sellouts and integrationists. Here they come, later attracting a bold, beautiful black man coming up out of the college campus, Dillard, coming up out of the advanced accelerated learning class, jet black, bald-headed black man who had heard the teachings of Elijah Muhammad from Minister Louis Farrakhan, and it changed his life. He was set on a course to be a militant revolutionary fighting for the minds and hearts of our people. And he linked up with them. And then ultimately, as fate would have it, he linked up ultimately with the new Black Panther Party in 1998 and became the chairman. Well, before 98, but became the chairman in 98, fighting hard to build this movement from the ground, giving it structure, giving it shape, giving it form. He had been all in the jungles with General Idi Amin as a lieutenant and a warrior general fighting against the British. This is real truth and history as we talk about the real history tonight of the Ku Klux Klan. He came and gave his expertise to the Nation of Islam, helping that movement, which we have to help, helping the new Black Panther Party, which we have to help, helping other movements throughout New York and throughout the world, the 5% Nation of Gods and Earths, helping with Attorney Alton Maddox and others, helping as many black organizations as he could to come together, the Republic of New Africa, the National Committee to Combat Fascism, and so many others that he worked with. He put his expertise in there and put all that into the new Black Panther Party for self-defense, to restart and to regenerate, and to, like the phoenix bird, rise from the ashes. And so we rose from the ashes with the panther in front of us, and we picked ourselves up, even though some didn't want us to fight on, didn't want us to continue on, said the struggle was dead, said there was no hope, too shell-shocked, too battle-torn, couldn't do it, they said. We fight on and pushed on to become now an international organization as he left in 2001, picked up again by another man off the college campus of Howard University who passed his law exam, bar exam on the first try. A student organizer who was well-equipped and well-trained by Dr. Khalid Abdul-Muhammad, who served as our national chairman from 2001 until 2013, the former chairman of the New Black Panther Party, Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz, who has passed the torch on to a faithful helper and a faithful servant, a faithful worker and revolutionary in this struggle, who loves black people from the time he was born into this world to the time that he departs. He has an infinite love for our people, which you must have to do this work. A man who was the national assistant to the Black Power General, as we call him, Dr. Khalid Muhammad. A everyday trained by this black man and trained by Ed Sims and trained from his own life experiences as an organizer and Pan-Africanist. He is now our national chairman and the man who has the right vision for the time. That's important. The right vision for the time for Pan-Africanism and nationalism for blacks and a revolutionary culture to transform our community with the right ideas and helpers behind him. Calling the General Hashim Nzinga. And we say to you all in the radio listening audience, Black Power. We greet you, of course, in peace. In your language, whatever you use, if you say As-salamu alaykum, which is Arabic for may peace be upon you. If you say Hotep, which means peace. If you say Shalom, which is peace. Or if you, Nation of God and Earth, and you say peace to the God, peace to the Earth, we say peace to you. We say Afabidia for Hodiye. We say Moja Huber, which is one love in Swahili. We say free the land. Black laws for all black people. It's honored to be with you. I have to give all them greetings and send you greetings on behalf of our National Central Committee and all of our membership across the country and throughout the world as we take on this bold subject, this daring subject, this even some would say most controversial subject called True History of the Ku Klux Klan in America. We'll be joined in just a few moments by a special guest, PhD and professor, Dr. Reginald Muhammad, who's also into the law practice. He'll go deep into it as he is one of the premier minds in the black nation concerning chiefly reparations and an intense student of history, of historical facts relating to our people. We know we got some friends on here. We know we got some brothers on here. We got some sisters on here. And we got some enemies. And I say all of you are welcome, even the enemies, to the Anti-Defamation League, to the Jewish Defense League, to the Southern Poverty Law Center, CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, all of you who listen to these broadcasts to find sound bites and try to twist for tomorrow's headline, tomorrow's story, I say stay tuned, buddy. You're going to get you more than an earful. As we get down to it, we have to take special time to talk about with these few moments the way that the media has depicted and been depicting black people throughout the country in this latest dispensation in time, the way that you have criminalized our people, you producers and directors, floor managers, those who run the stations and the networks, you have made a concerted effort, the black man, the new African and woman, look like something ugly to the world. You've used a concerted effort, a programmatic approach to make sure that the topic of conversation on most people in America's mind is the way that black people are handling themselves by being shown through your media in this latest debacle in Ferguson, Missouri, which is a clear injustice, a clear disrespect to our humanity, a clear challenge to our truth and our values and our culture. You have used this situation to turn your media cameras on what you produce as a negative aspect of our people. Now the latest thing is domestic violence and domestic abuse. Domestic situations among spouses. Ray Rice plastered now all over the screen. Ray Rice is the poster child for black domestic violence in America. And so he was given a punishment, and the punishment was rendered. Then TMZ reportedly goes to receive the full video, or works to receive the full video. And after they receive the full video, The full video shows the devastation and the aftermath of what really happened in the elevator. If you can remember before, I believe it was that same outlet that showed the situations between the singer Beyoncé and her husband Jay-Z in the elevator. What is the point here? The point here is to show those who some blacks look up to and who some blacks respect, to show them in the most negative light. And then to come in, NFL commissioner this and high-ranking official so-and-so this, and put down a demonstration effort to show correction and show a black person being corrected by these white figures in the public. But I'm here to say, you didn't do that for your own, and you haven't done that for your own. You have not put the same attention to members of your own culture who have domestically abused their spouses in the public. You have not made it a point to publicly embarrass and publicly humiliate your white counterparts or Caucasian culture parts. You have not worked to embarrass and humiliate them. I'll give you a case in point. There's so many I could run. But for example, Alabama Judge Mark Fuller received a lifetime appointment to the bench. He beat his wife, I think sometime in August, beat his wife. His wife calls 911, begs for help. The judge, this Mr. Mark Fuller, can be heard in the background beating her and whipping her. Yet, he's given a lifetime appointment to the bench. I want you to understand this. This is a judge, a federal judge, in Alabama, did the same thing that Ray Rice did. Beat his woman. And we don't condone it for the record officially on either side, whether black or white. But he did the same thing Ray Rice did. But yet, this Mark Fuller is given a lifetime appointment to the bench. Lifetime appointment. I want you to hear what I'm saying. Good. He was charged with beating his wife. He pled guilty. And they said his arrest record will be expunged if he completes his counseling program. For all of you Steelers fans out there, there's a lot of Steelers fans out there. I even would watch the Steelers from time to time. For you Steelers fans out there, Ben Roethlisberger, charged. Oh, yeah. Charged with abuses, alleged abuses. And yet, Roethlisberger is his name. He's still the quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers. He's still in good standings. He's still handling his business, okay, as they say in one particular case, because he had a couple of cases of rape and every daggone thing. They say he settled that case. Now, I want you to understand something about settling the case. when you settle that case, there is a reason to sell it because you're concerned that some information will come out that will prove your guilt. So it's better to settle and to hush up the charge of the situation than go all the way out with that thing. Roethlisberger still on the squad. Roethlisberger still in good standing. Yet, Ray Rice, poster child. Even the dynamic athlete who we don't always agree with, Floyd Mayweather, poster child for domestic violence. See, there's a double standard being played here. Double standard being played throughout America. Double standard being played to play into the criminalization of black youth, to play into the prison industrial complex aspirations for black youth and black people. See, how is it that you can posterize these individuals, but then the California Highway Patrolman, I believe it was, he's a highway patrolman, he beats a woman on a freeway, not just a woman, but a black woman, beats the black woman on the highway. And he still was in good standings. Now, some pressure was put on him. And last I heard, they had turned, the highway patrol had turned their review over to the prosecutor. But see, sometimes that's like Jesse James' case being turned over to Frank James. They say they suspended that officer, but he may, they say he may face serious charge as he straddled this black woman on a freeway shoulder and punched her repeatedly in the head. His name is Daniel Andrew, for those of you who don't know, the California Highway Patrolman, Daniel Andrew, busting a 51-year-old mother, black woman, in the head as she was walking along Interstate 10 in Los Angeles. How can this even be investigated? Why is he not offered a force? Understand what I'm trying to tell you, my people. Understand this clearly. You're dealing with two realities in America. Marlene Pinnock understands that well. Michael Brown, may he rest in power, had to understand that well with his life. Kendrick Johnson had to understand that with his life. There are others who understand you're dealing with two different realities here. And here you are, as a black man, a black woman, you're trying to fit in to the society that's constantly tell you we don't want you, we don't want nothing to do with you, we have no use for you. You've already built our corporations, our industry, our infrastructure. We've used you to the fullest extent. And here you are like a broken man or broken woman from a relationship saying, why don't you want me? Instead of building for self. Two different realities for the black man and black woman in the hills and smells of North America, as reported by what was called the Kerner Commission. The Kerner Commission talked about two realities, one black, one white, separate and unequal. For those who like to criticize certain members of our movement for being separatists, or what they identify as separatists, you are already separated in America. You are separated in the Caribbean. You're separated in some parts of Africa, separated in Asia, separated in Canada, separated in Mexico. You're separated wherever this kind of dynamic exists and this racial class expression set up by the Caucasian to embolden slavery and capitalism exists. You're already separated. It wasn't us that made the separation. So you can't blame the new Black Panther Party or any of these type of movements successfully and intelligently. You can blame us with rhetoric and hype. You can blame us and say, oh, you're fanning the flames. You can do that. But you cannot intelligently blame us for a separation that was already there and was dictated by the dictates of your people. You can't do that. It is most intelligent to push for a land of your own, independence, for freedom, for your own justice, for your own laws, for your own political infrastructure. That is most intelligent. It is most intelligent to push for my act and the balance and the harmony and the justice and the reciprocity and the peace for my own people than begging of people who have not had it in their nature. Give justice and equality to our people for well over 400 years. It is most intelligent for us to recognize the situation as it is. See, what gives birth to a situation like Sister Marlene Pinnock found herself in? What gives birth to a situation like a brother Ezell finds himself in, or Kendrick Johnson, or Sean Bell? What gives birth to a Gina Six? What gives birth to so many countless others out here that never make the news? It is the conditions that already existed in this country and other parts of the world long before we got here. So you can't get mad at the Chairman Hashim Nzinga or me or anybody who's under our program when we point out the indifferences in this country and other places concerning our people. You can't get mad when after mistreatment and brutality, murder and frame up and cover up, you can't get mad when we say we must do for ourselves. We must push for Black businesses and buy Black as often as possible and as much as possible. You can't get mad at us. You can say, oh, you're talking racism. That's racism. It's always racism, it seems, when it comes to Black people. But if other cultures want to get amongst themselves, the white folks want to get to a country club or whoever wants to do this, it's not racism then. It's only racism when it comes to Black people. Why? Because America still enforces the slave codes. See? The Black codes and the slave codes that did not want Black people to be amongst themselves in fear that the Blacks would organize their own rebellions against their conditions, that's still enforced today. That's why in California right now, it is illegal for you to group together on the corner over a certain number of people, in particular Black people, without the gang enforcement units and enhancement units vamping on you and moving on you, because the code still exists. You have fooled yourself into believing that things have changed and that there's been a complete progress because of an integrational push by civil rights activists who didn't understand the inner workings of this system and the brutality of the beast. No progress has been made in the areas of upward mobility, only concessions. And so it's concessions that our people exist off of and operate off of. We just want the crumbs from these rich people's tables. But the new Black Panther Party is saying we don't want no damn crumbs. Don't give us no damn crumbs. We're talking about organizing for the whole pie. Organizing for our own pie, our own industry. Organizing for our own manufacturing centers. See what I'm saying? Organize for yourself. See, that's the most important part of it all, is a united effort. The unity of the people is more important in a pan-African effort worldwide and a nationalist effort throughout America. is more important than anything else you can surmount against the obstacle of your oppression. You say, how is this relevant to the history of the Ku Klux Klan? It's all relevant because every action produces an equal reaction or a greater or lesser reaction depending upon the action. None of this stuff comes out of a vacuum. Ferguson, Missouri doesn't come out of a vacuum. None of the things that we see in our neighborhoods, none of that comes out of a vacuum. It doesn't just appear. None of this stuff that we're talking about dealing with as a community, as a neighborhood, as a people, as individuals, none of this stuff just happens just because you got up out of your bed and went to work or whatever. It doesn't happen like that. This is systemic. It's a system in place, just like apartheid in South Africa and other kinds of caste systems. There's a system in place in America that is designed to keep the rich elite, white and whoever, on the top and keep the poor on the bottom. And the poor is normally predominantly black and people of color. Every now and then a sprinkle of black will get to the top, to the so-called top, and they have to keep their foot on your black neck, your brown neck, your red neck. I mean red in the sense of indigenous Indians, not the redneck. I mean the red, the real red man and woman. They keep their foot on your neck to make sure that their cash flow continues to come in. The progenitors of filth and those who push filth in terms of entertainment to our people make sure that the filth and the death and destruction is pushed to our people so they could continue to be rich. Have no aims at all of stopping anything that they're doing. We give salute and credit to the entertainers who even showed an inkling of sensitivity towards Brother Mike Brown. We give thanks to the Nellies, and we give thanks to the Kiki Palmers. We give thanks to the David Banners. We give thanks to the Shans and others who came. Big Shans and others who came, we give thanks to that because we know that that takes a certain level of sacrifice on your level. But we will not get caught up in celebrity and won't get caught up in hype because there's a struggle that must continue there and in other parts of this country if we are to survive as a people. It is about the absolute survival of the black nation. Make no mistake about it. We are the only people who act like our survival is not at stake. It is because inherently we know we are the original people. We know we've been here since the beginning in our DNA, and we feel like we'll be here way beyond everybody else. But you have to understand that your own personal independent survival, your people's survival, your family's modern day survival is at stake based upon the moves that we make in this hour. At stake because two things cannot occupy the same space and time. You cannot have a complete black infrastructure that is overran and dominated by white supremacy, as Dr. Neely Fuller Jr. Talks about, that is overran by white supremacist ideology and ideas and colonization, and everything in history belonged to the white man, and you and the educational prowess and protocol all come from the white people who whitewashed your history in the first place. Cannot exist in the same place. Light and darkness don't exist in the same place. One has to give in to the other. See, that's why we're saying separate. See, there's some whites that are smart that want to separate. They want nothing better than to separate. And say, hey, they know this melting pot illusion doesn't work. Trying to cram all of these nationalities and these powers and all that on top of each other just for the exploitation of the people. They know that don't work. So they say, hell, we'll separate amongst our own people. I support you in that. We should be saying the same thing. Shouldn't be trying to force yourself where you're not wanted. Force yourself to make a toilet and all this type of stuff. See, equality don't, I said this last week, as we prepare to get our guest on, equality does not represent justice. Just because I can take the same kind of leak in the toilet that this other person can take, that don't make us just. That don't make it a just playing field. Doesn't make it at all. Just means now I've been permitted to use this same toilet. See, that's not justice. Sense of equality. That's not justice, and that's what you're talking about. You're fighting, bleeding, and dying in the streets to be integrated into an unjust society and system, which reminds you every day that it wants nothing to do with you. And you're so foolish because just like the slaves in the plantation day, who once they were emancipated, not freed, but emancipated, once they were emancipated, they were slaves for so long, they didn't have confidence in themselves that they could pick themselves up and do something for themselves out in the world. Some of them even returned to the plantation. That's sad and that's a shame that you return to the plantation after being forced to be let go. And so ultimately now, because many refuse to build for self and do for self and accept the ideology of black nationalism to nationalize everything that your people can make and produce and use and to monetize everything that you possess and you process and spend amongst your own and make your own dollars, oh, $1.1 trillion that go through our community, make those dollars circulate in our community, since we refuse to do that, and we're constantly trying to integrate ourselves into the system that has already deemed us three-fifths of a human being, less than man, less than woman, Dred Scott, that there's no laws that a black man or woman has that any white man or woman is duty-bound to respect, with all of that being in the core and the fabric of this country. Instead of being intelligent enough to take the ideology of Garvey and black nationalism and do for self and organize and carve something out to call your own, you fall for the bait and you fall for the good old American dream, which you know by now is an American nightmare, or you should know has been an American nightmare to make it to the so-called top in this world. In this society, most have all but gone crazy, sold their souls a long time ago, done all kinds of freakish and licentious behaviors, done all kinds of savage acts with Caucasian people and others, women on women and men on men and man on animal and all kind of things that they've done to make it to the so-called top in this world just to get some money, which now is worthless. The fiat money, the worthless paper that's in most of our pockets has no gold standard, no silver standard. It's not backed by anything material. It's only really worth something here in the country that prints it. They sold their soul. They have become the black crackers of the neighborhoods and communities. That's like this, the plantation owner or the plantation person who's designated to whip the slave, handing the whip as they used to do to the black slave and telling the black slave to whip him and keep him or her in check. You know about them. They exist in modern form in corporation, in modern form in government, in modern form in policing agencies, in modern form in other areas of this society. They're here, black crackers who crack the whip on their own people. And as the general and comrade George Jackson taught, on your climb to ascension for liberation, your most difficult of opposition and number one of opposition for black liberation and black freedom will be from your own people, the black lackey. It'll be from your own way before you even have to deal with anything outside of your own culture. It'll be right in the middle of us, those who have separated themselves from our culture and forced themselves into an alien culture in an alien position and have alienated themselves from us. That'll be our number one opposition before we ever deal with our historical age-old enemies, because they have a vested interest in the survival of the white power structure and white supremacy and racism. They have a vested interest in that. They, as Dr. Khalid Muhammad taught, try their hardest and do their very best to be the white man's nigger on a daily and consistent basis. They try their best to be the best little Negro they can possibly be without ruffling any feathers, and making sure that you rebellious slaves out there and you quote-unquote rabble-rousers out there, that you are kept in check and kept in line. We see it in Ferguson, how they sent you civil rights leaders down there and some of you religious leaders down there to try to quench the spirit of the youth, as the youth were out there saying, this is for the future generations. They were saying, this is bigger than Mike Brown, regardless to the circumstance. They said this is bigger than him, that they said they refuse to pass this on to the future generations. And the white man, the pigs and all the others trotted those black lackeys out there right in front of the people, prepared the speech for them and told them what to say and told them what they wanted the people to hear, to quench that kind of spirit. But I thank the creator of our people. And I thank the strong of our people, and we thank the strong of our people, that they have not punked out, and that they have not given up in the pursuit of justice, and that they have not stopped the cause. No matter what obstacles they face, and no matter what got in their way, they have continued to push for black survival. They have continued to push to make sure that our people are not trampled upon. I'm talking about young brothers and sisters out there too. Youngsters, the rejected, the despised, the have-nots. Saw a group that came up called the Lost Voices, the Lost Souls. They've come out the woodworks where maybe yesterday they might have been fighting one another. They might have been killing one another. They might have been throwing up different sets against each other, having tribal differences with each other, neighborhood differences with each other. But on that day, they put all that to the side, said none of that matter. We're fighting for a cause that's bigger than ourselves, and they've come together on a united front and a united effort, and that must be encouraged, and it must be increased. That's the fear. That is the fear that Hoover and everybody else had, was that the young would unite. It's got nothing to do with the new Black Panther Party. It ain't got nothing to do with no other organization. It's time. The creator, the God, has dictated that time, that our people would come together and rise together and organize together. Now, we do have a part to play in terms of organizing our people for self-determination in Kujichagulia, and we will play that. But this is already predestined. And so you cannot punk out from your destiny. You cannot punk out in this hour on the freedom and liberation of our people. You cannot disrespect the efforts of Fannie Lou Hamer, and disrespect the efforts of Ida B. Wells, and disrespect the efforts of Sojourner Truth. You cannot disrespect those efforts to get us to this point. And so stay strong wherever you are. Continue to fight wherever you are, and remain bold wherever you are, for that time is at hand. Let me now bring to our radio listening audience our bold, courageous chairman who has continued to organize and carry the flag of black liberation and black salvation, and the flag of Garvey, and that flag of Elijah, and that flag of Malcolm, and that flag of the Honorable Dr. Khalid Muhammad. Let's bring on our national chairman, who will introduce our guests and take us forward. Our national chairman, Minister Hashim Nzinga. Black power, Brother Chairman.
Black power.
Yes, sir. Can you hear me? Black power.
Man, believe me, I'm glad this is recorded, so I can go back and listen again. That was one powerful lecture, and it came at a time when our people really needed it, because we're at the crossroad. And I'm excited about the crossroad, because when you come to the crossroad for the third time, you ain't got but one direction to go. The crossroad, right. You can go forward, you can go right, you can go left, or you can go backward. Well, we went left. It was the wrong way. We went backwards. It was the wrong way. We went to the right. Right sound right, but it was the wrong way. Only one way for Africans in America to go, and that's forward.
That's right.
Forward. And the teaching tonight, my brother Sean Kwali, our national chief of staff, deserves a black hand and deserves to be passed on the internet throughout the hills of North America, because that's good teaching. And to wrap it up, you know, we are in a situation where this devil has always kept his same process, because his same process has always worked. And when we go back in this area, what you were talking about earlier, is sensationalism and media being used to dictate the world. And we go back, and we said it on this show before, I just suggested everybody read two books, The Way the Jews Created Hollywood and The Miseducation of the Negro. They go hand in hand. The Jews created Hollywood so they control people's minds. And after their Holocaust in the 1940s with Hitler and on, they used images in Hollywood and radio and Wall Street Journal and New York Times and L.A. Times and Atlanta Journal-Constitution to what? To control what the world does. And now nobody even attempts to challenge them anywhere, or they would be crushed. Because the two things we got to give the Jews credit for, they organized, they said never again, and they stick together, and they don't give a damn what nobody said. They were that Yonker right in your face now. You go in Walmart and Publix and your Kmart, they got all kind of Jewish stars in the areas where you buy postcards. 10 years ago, 20 years ago, they wouldn't even use a Jewish name. 10 years ago, 20 years ago, they wouldn't wear a Yonker nowhere in the public. They didn't want anybody to know who they were, because they had a plan. They were taking over the banking, taking over the financing of the world, taking over the images of the world with the TV, the radio, and the newspaper and the magazines that are printed. And now Obama and everybody else have to bow down to them, because they run the world on media. And that's what you were talking about today, Brother Sean. You were talking about a white man who lifted his hand, put his hand on a Bible, and swore in the Ferguson Police Department that he would protect the United States citizens and people of Ferguson. And then he goes out and breaks his oath by assassinating and shooting a young man on his way to college while his grandmother is watching and his mother is screaming a block from his house. And the world watches this, from Russia to China to Jamaica to all 54 African nations watching this on CNN and the other networks across the country. And everybody is asking Obama and Eric Holder and everybody else, and asking us, what are we going to do about this murderous white man who has shot this black kid in the back and shot him 9 times, and the world is responding, and all of a sudden, now the news switches from Ferguson, and like you said, now every black man who has spit on the ground has been making national news. They'll have OJ on the news before this week, but we got to go back. Before we go forward, we have to go back, and we have to remember Birth of a Nation. We have to remember when they used Birth of a Nation to show the black man raping white women, show the black man stealing from the white man, show the black man dragging the white woman, and then the whole nation went buck wild, lynching, burning, and destroying the black man. Simple, man. This media has over and over again destroyed us. And most of the time it was the cry of the white woman, like in Rosewood. He raped me, and the whole black city goes burning. Black Wall Street, a little black boy is in jail. A little white girl say he raped her. finna be lynched. Black Wall Street burns. When you go to Emmett Till, looked at a white woman. Body is found on a fan. This white media and this white woman and this white man is a dangerous thing. But, you know, when BET was sold to Viacom, it was sold to Viacom. And if you go back and study it, Brother Sean, the minute they sold it to the Jews, you had Tavis Smiley. You had the other young brother. You had Bev Smith. They were, BET was bringing the news strong, and they was getting their nightly news together so they can tell our story. Viacom bought it, and the first thing they did was took off the news, trashed the news, put the news in the garbage. Now Tavis Smiley's on PBS somewhere. And Sister Bev Smith and all those great news reporters that was going to be on BET are all spread it out now. And so the Jews brought us the BET Awards, and all we get is a bunch of rap. No news. But news run the world now. News runs Ferguson. So we're glad to say that Tyler Perry is not going to have us last forever. I think he's a serious brother, and he's joined with Oprah. And I think that between Oprah and Tyler, we'll soon be able to control more. I want to thank God for Kathy Hughes while we're going the right direction. We can't sit here on the radio and just give the crackers the world and give the crackers like they some made-up people from another planet. They just like us. So we got to give ourselves, after 400 years of slavery, 400 years of bondage, credit that we got Tavis Smiley on PBS. And I watch him sometime. He covers some good stuff. We got Tyler Perry and Oprah, like I said, joined together. We got Kathy Hughes and TV One that's got the news anchor Roland Martin that's been on our show. And we got to start supporting this black news, man, is what I'm basically saying. We got to go back to supporting black newspapers. And, you know, and then if we start supporting black news, then we'll hear about the 100 black men giving scholarships. We'll hear about Steve Harvey Camp for Kids. We'll hear about Denzel Washington giving millions and millions to the Boys and Girls Club. We'll hear about Deion Sanders, Camps for Kids. We'll hear about Richard Dunn building houses. We'll hear about Brother Mike Roberts, 11,000 black employees. We'll hear about the United Negro College Fund giving scholarships to black people all over the world. We'll hear positive news. Now, with no further delay, do you see a 404 number on the board? With the last number 0513.
Yes, sir. He's on now.
Well, let me get off and let's find out what this Birth of a Nation was all about. I just wanted to come on and say Black Power, long live Khalid Muhammad. You did an excellent job the first hour, and we want these crackers who monitor to this station and the FBI to know that they're not going to turn the cameras off of this killer cop in Ferguson and turn it on the black man and make the black man look ridiculous. We're going to turn the camera back to where it is, and you better indict this cracker. Now, I'll yield my time as chairman of this party, because we're going to be back in Ferguson this week. We'll talk about that later, and get the eye back on Ferguson and off the black man, and I'll let my man and the professor, Reginald Muhammad, have his time, because he's going to need all his time to talk about this Klan nation. Black power.
Yes, sir. Black power, Brother Chairman. Back to you, brother, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you, Brother Chairman. At this time, family, we want to bring on Mighty Warrior and Professor, no stranger to Black Power Radio, but we want to definitely introduce him to those who don't know him, our brother, champion, working the cause, liberation struggle, Brother Reginald Muhammad. Black Power, sir. Can you hear me?
Black Power. Assalamu alaikum.
Barigani,
Hotep.
Barigani, Hotep. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. How you doing, brother? We can hear you.
Good, good. How are you all doing, brother? And first off, I want to say it is an honor and it is a privilege and it's certainly a pleasure to be back on with the mighty warriors from around the country and parts of the world. And to kind of give some information on what I think is key and critical, even in this hour, the whole origin of the Ku Klux Klan. And I'm not going to be able to deal with all of it tonight, but we will lay the base and the foundation and some framework that I think that is necessary and is needed, so we'll understand the hour better and how we will be able to navigate in the hour better and how we'll be able to be successful in this hour. Because, again, the Ku Klux Klan, brother, I think One of the things in the narrative, brother, as we were looking around the country and seeing various incidents around the country, infractions, are people still being shot down? Are people still being brutalized? Are people still being terrorized and tortured? What you will see is that I submit to you all, and the research that we have done at the Jope Institute and the Jope Institute for Political and Strategic Studies, I suggest to you all that a lot of this is still Klan work and Klan activity, and I think we can prove it without a shadow of a doubt. And so I want to go through some of that information tonight, and I know my time is limited, so I'm going to go through it, and hopefully Brother Hashim and the rest of the party will allow me to come back at another point in time, and we'll be able to go through that even more comprehensively. And again, Brother Sean, I want to thank you, brother, for the work that you're doing and the Panthers around the country, the organizing that you all are doing, the work on the ground that has to be done every day, and then the research that has to be done consistently that we be successful. I want to say, first off, let's give a little history of the Klan, brother, because I'm saying and suggesting to you, in police departments around the country, military installations, fraternal organizations, the gamut of it, militias, even within the free and accepted Mason lodges, you have Klan members. That's an actual fact. And we got to remember now, the Klan starts and gets its base and its origin in 1865 in Pulaski, Tennessee. And again, that's Pulaski, Tennessee, right near the Alabama line, south of Nashville. And remember, too, the Klan is not a situation where a lot of times we talk about the Klan, brother. We talk about the Klan from the vantage point of looking at it as some wild-eyed radicals, extremists. Well, yeah, they're extremists and they're wild-eyed radicals, but they're a little bit more sophisticated and a little bit more packaged than that. Now, remember, the original Klan, the original six members, are started in a sitting judge's office in Pulaski, Tennessee, and this is a sitting judge. This is actually his law office where they sit down and develop the concept of the Klan. And two, Ku Klux Klan, if you go back and look at the etymology or the root of the word, these are Greek words also. And original Klan was set up, and even today, it's set up with passwords, handshakes, and a level of secrecy. And it got its base, and some of it developed as a result of the some of the early members on college campuses. So we got to be able to look at all of that. And remember now, the Klan at its apex, brothers and sisters, the apex of the Klan, their suggestion and their research showed that they had well over 5 million members. Well, if they said that they had 5 million members, I say it was probably about 7 million members. If we look at it, a lot of the members didn't want to be identified because they have felt and have felt throughout the duration of the Klan, now going on 150 years, that if you do it in secrecy, you'll be successful around the country. And so they say it was 5 million Klan members, and I say it was probably closer to 7 million Klan members at least. Now, one of the things, Brother Sean and Brother Hashim, we got to understand now, if that was back in 1865 it started, and they have never totally disbanded. Now, they had some highs and some lows in different periods, but remember, this is Robert E. Lee, Confederate general, Bedford Forrest. These are Confederate generals. And what you'll see, though, many of the Klan members early on, these were people who had been defeated during the Civil War, Southern crackers that was defeated during the Civil War. And their answer to the North, and what they call Northern liberals, and to niggas that they label us as, this was their answer for the defeat. They started to organize underground and started to build in to retaliate and to reclaim their position of white supremacy at the end of the day. And before I even go any further, let's say this too. Dr. Francis Cress Welsings and Neely Fuller has reminded us, if we don't understand white supremacy, racism, what it is and how it works, Everything else you understand will only confuse you. If you don't understand racism, white supremacy, what it is and how it works, everything else you understand will only confuse you. So this is about white supremacy at the end of the day. At the end of the day. And they have maintained the base. They have maintained the position. And so we got to ask now, if there were 5 million members of the Klan back almost 150 years, I suggest to you all that the Klan is still active in various states throughout the country and certainly various cities. And, yeah, they're heavy in the South, but states in the Midwest and in the North, Klan are just as heavy. Some of their best recruiting grounds and some of the larger memberships were in states like Michigan and Indiana and Kentucky and places like that. So, and of course Ohio. But you can go out west, East Coast, West Coast, South, North or South, and you'll find Klan activity. And the key was is that okay, if it was 5 to 7 million members, I'm suggesting to you that it's probably doubled since that time, but a lot of the Klan go underground, and they will not tell you that they're Klansmen, but they will subscribe to the whole white supremacist doctrine and theory wholeheartedly. And so remember now, these original Klan members, if there was 5 million of them, remember they had children, they had grandchildren. And so when I'm suggesting you today, when you start talking about the elected officials, what they're doing, based on public policy and foreign policy, again, you're talking about white supremacy. And so at the end of the day, some of the police shootings that you're talking about, these are Klansmen, brother, and you got to realize is that it ain't about no you hear the Negro leadership talking about, well, the rash of shootings around the country that has continued since our captivity, since we've been brought here, the murder of our people. You hear Negroes even talking today, talking about sensitivity training that police officers need. Well, no, they don't need any sensitivity training, brother. This is their culture. This is their way of life. This is their thinking. This is their behavior. And at the end of the day, at the end of the day, we have to really talk about separation at the end of the day. And I know some people are not with that, and we'll deal with that at another time and another place. But the Klan, in these various states, the Klan is very heavy. And one of the things that help promote the Klan is that their literature, there's a number of books that are written on the Klan, and probably – what gave the Klan, when you start talking about cinema, film, one of the earliest films to ever to be known, and anybody who was a student of film and theater, they will go back and look at this film called The Birth of a Nation. Well, The Birth of a Nation celebrated the Klan. It showed black people in the most debased way. It showed black people being brutalized by the Klan. It showed black people being tortured by the Klan. And it gave the Klan a – hello?
Yes, sir.
Can you all hear me? Oh, okay.
Yes,
well,
sir.
The Birth of a Nation, you can't go to any film school anywhere in the country and not study the original cinema and this film called The Birth of a Nation. And, of course, there was no talking. There was no audio on the film at that time. There were words at the bottom of the film. But the film that is recognized and studied by students all over the world is called The Birth of a Nation. But The Birth of a Nation, it showed the Klan and glamorized the Klan. It showed them in their hood. It showed them in their regalia, torturing and tormenting black people and murdering and even lynching black people on the film. And today it's even held up as a milestone in cinematography. You can't, again, study cinematography or film without going and looking at this piece called The Birth of a Nation. And then, too, probably one of the most credible works on the study of the Klan, it's called The Ku Klux Klan by William Randall. But he's a Florida State professor of history. And so he's done a pretty good documentation on the Klan. But there are a lot of other books that we want to look at and in my research that we've had a fortune to look at that deals with the Klan and just how effective they were at terrorizing, torturing, and murdering black people. One of the other books that you want to look at and consider when you study the Klan, read the book The Peculiar Institution of Slavery by Dr. Kenneth Stamp, another one of their historians. And he deals with the Klan and the behavior in the South and throughout the North of just how bad it was for black people and anybody who would lend any assistance to black people. But again, that book is called The Peculiar Institution of Slavery. And then also the book The White Man's Burden by Jordan Winthrop, another work that you have to read and understand the Klan. Another book, the book that you want to read is called The People's History of the United States by Howard Zinn. Now, these are all PhDs, Jews, and some of them white professors, but this is what they have documented. And so far, I have not found any major credible work by a black historian or politician about the Klan. And one of the things, brother, and when we start talking about organized murder of black people by police departments, militia, and whoever else, what we generally leave out of the conversation is the Klan. And I'm submitting to you and suggesting to you all, to the listening audience, many of them or some of them are Klan members who subscribe to this whole doctrine of white supremacy. And so to understand that, they don't care nothing about politically, us being politically correct. They care nothing about black life or value black life. They don't care anything about you marching and pleading. They want separation. They see us as a problem. And remember, and I may have said this some time ago, on the last time I was on some months ago, remember the Klan and the white ruling class, all their four components that they always deal with when they decide whether they're going to save a life or take a life, what politically, economically, socially, even spiritually and economically, there are four variables that they always deal with. And I'm suggesting to you this is how the Klan operates also, because you got elected officials. One of the things, William Randall's book, The Ku Klux Klan, he showed that there were elected officials that were Klansmen. And the next time I'm on, because I want to take some questions, but he'll show you that there were Klansmen who were governors. There were sitting judges who were Klansmen. So these were not just extreme radicals, what the media, white media, may call extreme radicals. No, these are people who are supposed to be professional people. These are business people. These are people who are supposed to be spiritual leaders. These are people who are supposed to be business leaders. These are people who are supposed to be educators. And one of the things about the Klan does decline by the early 1900s. Well, it will regenerate itself by 1915. And Brother Sean and Brother Hashim, if you're on the call, you never would probably guess where the Klan would actually officially incorporate. Well, the Klan actually officially incorporated itself for the first time, and this is a historic fact and a record, was in Atlanta, Georgia, Fulton County Court. This is where the Klan actually incorporates. And 1915, to show you what else happened in 1915, this is where the Klan made one of its major public rituals that is well documented. And this is not a conspiracy theory or anything, but it's well documented. It was right on the top of Stone Mountain in Stone Mountain, Georgia, which is DeKalb County. Now, the issue became is that one of the first public showings is where doing that ritual on Stone Mountain was one of the first times you saw them publicly burn a cross. And now you see burning of the crosses is kind of the ritual now. But this is the same brutal Klan that, brother, again, that terrorized and murdered our people throughout the United States. And again, if there were 5 million Klansmen, where are their grandchildren, children, and nieces and nephews? Where are they today? And again, I'm suggesting to you, they may not be wearing sheeps and the robes and the regalia and the hoods and all of that. I'm suggesting to you that they're right up around us, brother, in every facet of American life. Anybody got any questions before? I know I've been kind of rambling and I've been kind of jumping around, but hopefully some of what I said made sense. Anybody have any questions before I go any further?
It all. Yes, sir. Go ahead, Brother Sherman.
Does anybody have any questions?
Everything is making sense, Brother Breslin. I mean, we can go to the line if they have questions for you, but I mean, you rolling.
Okay. All right. Okay, well, hopefully somebody's following me and they're able to keep up with it. I know I'm kind of jumping around, but it's so much about the Klan. And then, like I said, maybe at another time I will come back and in a little bit more formal way give you more information about the Klan. But again, in 1915, at the top of Stone Mountain. So people wanted to know why was Georgia? Well, Georgia, Florida, Alabama, Mississippi, and all them southern states, brother, that participated in the Civil War had their veterans, many of them, the documentation showed from Robert E. Lee all on down after they were defeated, they gathered themselves together and decided how they were going to organize and how would they combat blacks who were now what they felt were roaming around, starting to build in what we call Reconstruction. How would they combat that? How would they terrorize our people? And so the Knight Riders, the Klan, and others, brother, no matter what they call them, they were all subscribing to the same doctrine. So so the issue became, if they were all subscribing, no matter what they call themselves, what they decided, brother, is that they locally they would look at what they called dens. You had the Grand Dragon, you had the Grand Wizard, but they were all head of, and locally they're known as dens. When Klan, they're known as generally as dens. And what I've found, brother, my research, and how is that even applicable today? Brother, I'm working on finalizing some research. There was a brother, a young brother that was killed I'm just going to say Georgia because I don't want to give the case. It was a very popular case. Well, brother, my research is pointing back to the fact that the police officers that was involved in the killing is a Klansman. Active Klansmen. But here's the other story to it, Brother Sean and Brother Hashim, is that not only is he a Klansman, but they're all a member of a particular lodge in Georgia, Masonic Lodge. So this is the issue, and so this is why, you know, I don't want to just bring you a bunch of history, and it ain't relevant today, and it ain't applicable to our struggle today. I'm suggesting to you all, this is one reason why you see throughout the South, they keep the lodges separated. You got the Prince Hall Free and Accepted Masons, which are the black Masons in throughout the United States, but then you got the International and Scottish Rite Masons. Well, I'm suggesting to you, especially in the South where they still keep the lodges separate, and they won't allow you because you can't just walk up to the lodge and say that I want to become a member, I got enough money, I got the right title, I got the right status. No, you have to petition in order to come and be a member of the lodge. And I'm suggesting to you the reason they keep the lodges exclusive is because they have Klan members in some of these lodges. And I won't say all of them, but certainly they're Klansmen in some of the lodges. And some of our research is going to show the final report that we're working on is that we'll show that the police that was involved in a very high-profile killing in Georgia, the police officer that was involved in it, we'll be able to show that he's certainly an active Klansman, and the particular lodge, there are the known Klansmen in this particular lodge. Anybody got any questions?
That's
Brother
Reginald. That's heavy.
Brother Reginald, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
You know, here they suspended two Florida sheriffs or Florida police because it came out that they were Klan. And I just don't understand, with all these bald-head, skin-head police running around, why it took so long for it to finally start coming to light that these police departments, especially in the suburbs around Black City, are stocking like a fish pond with Klan. And now they always been in the inner city, but not as thick as they have in the suburbs, like you were talking about Georgia and Stone Mountain. So when you get to Gwinnett, you know they Klan police. When you get to Doryville and the surrounding areas, and I don't care if it's Chicago or, you know, whatever city you want to use, those metropolitan areas, I mean, those suburbs around it, But now all of them are moving inward to the inner city, and they're destroying our children, you know. And I want you to talk about a brother who wrote the book, The Black Robe, and you know the rest.
Yes,
you
sir.
Know, my, how important was that book?
Yeah, don't judge Bruce White, Black Robe, White Justice. Well, he documents the imbalance in the whole judicial system, and he documents case after case. He dealt with, he looked at the Klan who were involved as sitting judges, law enforcement officers, why we get the sentences that we get. The white boy can do the same thing, a white woman can do the same thing, and there's a great disparity in sentencing and prison time that we're getting. Why are we handled by law enforcement with a very heavy hand? Why there seems to be a disdain and outright hatred? And again, I'm able to show, and then hopefully in our final report, we are able to show conclusively that, again, that the Klan has not gone anywhere. In fact, they are very vibrant. They are very active. And the tragedy is, Brother Hashim and Brother Sean and to the rest of the party and the listeners around the country and around the world, nobody has really raised the question. Because, and one reason I think that we have not raised the question, one of the major impediments that we have as a people, Brother Sean and Brother Hashim, is that, Brother, think about it in this context. If you have a people for more than four centuries who have been tortured, terrorized, and traumatized, what has happened to us, brother, even today, you see it at every level when you deal with black people. Brother, I don't care what label they wear, what organization they are in, and no matter what degrees, what schools they have been through, brothers and sisters, you will see a level of fear in dealing with the white ruling class and even those, the white working class. And so from the president on down, nobody's going to call the question, because when you start shaking this tree, all kind of stuff will fall out of the tree in the way of Klansmen and how it's interconnected to government officials, how it's interconnected to law enforcement, local, national, military, otherwise. When you start shaking this Klan tree and following the trail. And I'm suggesting to you the reason why it has not been raised by black elected officials is because of the, as Minister Farrakhan said, what is killing the black community is our ignorance and our fear. Now, what level of fear is that we're talking about? When a people have been terrorized, tortured, and traumatized for centuries, brother, it is set up a level of fear. And you know the word that I was blessed to coin is called cacophobia. Cacophobia, the embedded but perpetual fear or intimidation of those who classify themselves as Caucasian, white, Aryan, or Jewish. Again, cacophobia. The perpetual fear or intimidation of those who classify themselves as Caucasian, white, Aryan, or Jewish. Now, when a people have been terrorized, tortured, and traumatized for centuries, brother, no matter, even after the Emancipation Proclamation was signed in 1863, and you 150 years up from chattel slavery. Well, with that much torture, terrorizing, and being trauma for that long, it set up a level of fear in our people. And probably the best research on that, if you go back and read Wellesley's work, she wrote the ISIS paper back in the early 90s. The book is still applicable today. She wrote several essays and showed what it produced in us as a people. And I'm going to give you an example so you don't think I'm just talking a bunch of theory tonight. I'm going to give you an example. If you look at the mayor of Atlanta and you look at any black elected official, look at President Obama, when they come to the hood, brother, or when they come to talk before a predominantly black audience, they talk real strong and bold. They're very commanding. They're very demanding. But when they go before the Jewish Knesset, the Israeli Knesset, when they go before the white ruling class, brother, they go in there buck dancing, scratching, trying to appease them, apologizing, and at the end of the day, asking for a new script and directions and instructions from that segment of the white ruling class. And you see that with President Obama. You see that with locally in Atlanta with the mayor of Atlanta. You see that with look at the former four-star general Colin Powell. Brother, here's a man who knew foreign policy well, fought in major theaters of war, graduate of the Army War College. Think about it like this, brother. When Bush, Cheney, and Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz, all of them gave him the script and told him to go out before the United Nations and before the world and declare the weapons of mass destruction. Now, he was already in opposition to that, but when they gave him the script, the inability to tell the white man hell no and to go to hell is an indication that a brother or sister suffers from cacophobia. Because, see, we'll do that with each other all day, but we won't do that with the white ruling class. And I'm suggesting that black elected officials, they understand this whole Klan piece, aspects of it, but they won't raise the issue, brother, because of fear. Because of the fear and intimidation that we have suffered as a people. And we can't really talk about any liberation work, brother, if you got a major variable or major problem with our people as far as fear. We can talk about organizing all day, but hell, if we're scared to organize, if we're scared to unite, if we're scared to coalesce with each other and build coalition.
And if we're scared to fight.
If we scared, absolutely, if we're scared to fight, stand
world,
up and fight.
Got, and see, and this is what I'm mad about, and we're at the top of the hour, halfway in the hour, and we have a large listener, and I want to share you with them. But, you know, before you came on, we had this, we had a Brother Sean did a beautiful lecture and layout of the white media and how they turned Ferguson on the black man. And we talked about, he talked about how this judge from Alabama was at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel in Atlanta, beat his wife. Now, this is a sitting judge that has a office, that holds an office where he can't, it's a lifetime assignment.
Yeah, he's a U.S. federal judge, Brother Sheen. That's
right,
a
U.S. He beats his wife in the Ritz-Carlton Hotel, and he evidently does it in a way where she doesn't go to the hospital, but he does it in a way where if you take a white judge from Alabama in Georgia at the Ritz-Carlton downtown, black Atlanta, and you put him in jail with no bond, a judge with no bond, you know he had to do something
exactly
horrific. But it never made CNN. Women didn't talk about it for 40 days. They didn't bring up the judges that are on alcohol, judges that are on drugs, judges that have been, they didn't just run the whole gamut. Then I was in Columbus, Georgia, and a white man came out in his garage. Police were in his driveway. They got a call. Came out, shot at the police 5 times. The police retreated. Came back with SWAT team, shields, and a negotiator, negotiated the man out of his house, handcuffed him, and took him to jail, which they are trained to do. But we all know on this phone, if a black man would have spit at them goddamn pig, he would have been shot 50 times, his wife, his kids, and everybody in the house would be dead. It's just
absolutely
the difference between the way white people and the Klan, which is some of the police and some of the judges and some of the people we're talking about tonight, just be frank, have built this country since 1776, white supremacy, and they still look at us as somebody who could be sold tomorrow, and we haven't did what we needed to do to get their goddamn hands from around our neck, brother.
Yeah. Well, brother Hashim, you're absolutely right, and that was actually a sitting federal judge. And remember now, as a political scientist, that we understand that one of the things that we studied, the executive, legislative, and judicial branches of government, The U.S. federal court judge, you're right, that is a lifetime appointment. He's appointed by the president, and he can only be removed by an impeachment process. And the only you've only had one federal judge ever impeached since Reconstruction, brother, is former U.S. He's a congressman now, Alcee Hastings out of Florida. In the late 80s, Alcee Hastings was impeached by Congress in the early 80s. And again, you're right, Brother Sheen, this never made the media when, if you listen to the 911 call, the woman that is being beat at the Ritz-Carlton, she's literally crying and begging for help and pleading for help because she's being beaten. And you never heard about this on the news. You never saw it until recently, and I just heard about the case on last week. And again, but there has been no outcry from black politicians. There has been no outcry from black leaders, any of them. And again, they suffer from caucophobia. And brothers, and this is, and I'm not just saying that. One of the things that happened, Brother Sheeman, I got to spend some time on it because if we're going to move and we're going to organize and get the fear up off us to stand up and defend ourselves and defend our lives and our people and our nation, talking about the black nation, if we're going to do that, that fear, we got to understand where our people are and how to help them overcome that fear. Now, one of the things that happened, brother, even Langston Hughes documents this in the 30s. Think about it like this. Langston Hughes is traveling throughout the South in the early 30s, and he's angered and incensed because he's traveling and black people are being lynched, Brother Hashim and Brother Sean and others are on the line. They're being lynched throughout the South and being murdered, ran out of their communities, children being killed and everything else. And Langston Hughes is incensed because black politicians, black college professors, and black educators are literally demanding that the students on college, black college campuses and in high schools, they're threatening them with suspension or expulsion if they go out and start to organize in the streets and defend themselves against the Klan and white night riders who are coming to burn them out of their houses and lynch them. Well, anyway, the colleges and the universities, brother, that were in existence at that time, and even some of the public high schools, Langston Hughes is actually teaching it and speaking there, but he's become angered and incensed because of black religious leaders and black educators of forbidding them to even organize and defend themselves. And Brother Hashim, he wrote a piece in 1934 called Cowards from the Colleges. And he said, forevermore, unless we develop young people on our college campus as an antidote for the docile dignity of meek professors and well-paid presidents who now run our institutions, American Negroes had best look for the unlettered for their leaders and expect only cowards from the colleges.
That's heavy, brother. We got a question. We got a question out here that wanted to know if there was Klan activity up north as far as Canada. Does Canada and the Canadians, the Black Canadians, did they experience the Ku Klux Klan as well?
Well, no, they don't have what they call so far. The research has not shown that they have a Ku Klux Klan, but certainly they have an Aryan Brotherhood there, and they all subscribe to the, and the next time I'm on, I'm going to read you all a portion of this whole doctrine of white supremacy. Because the one of the things, Brother Chairman, that we hear all the time, we hear the word white supremacy thrown around and very loosely used. But, Brother, do you know that's actually a doctrine that spells out and whites and other Europeans, and even in Canada, to answer your question, they have a copy of that doctrine. They'll never acknowledge it publicly, and they never show it to you. But by Allah's permission, I will share some of that with you all the next time I'm on, because it is not just a conspiracy theory. It's not just somebody saying, well, just white supremacy. Well, they spell out what it looks like, what are the parameters, what is the framework based on, what is the model, what is the methodology, and we got to know that because when we got information, brother, when we are with information, we can act intelligently, and we certainly can defend our lives and defend our people and our community and the black nation when we are armed with information. Because when we know how the enemy is coming, we'll be prepared for him. And one of the things, brother, I want to say, too, I don't want to make it sound gloom and doom. Brother, anytime we have stood up and organized, the Klan has backed down, and there are literally hundreds of cases throughout America and throughout the South where black people have organized. And probably his work, We Will Shoot Back, Dr. Akinyele Emoji at Georgia State University, book came out more than a year ago, We Will Shoot Back. But he talks about us defending ourselves against the Klan in that book. That's how it's applicable to my conversation tonight, is that when we have organized ourselves, brother, and decided that enough is enough and that we will take some lives in defense of our lives, then these crackers have backed down hundreds of times,
yes,
brother. And the book is called, again, We Will Shoot Back by
yes,
Dr. Akinyele
yes,
Emoji. So if you get a chance to get a copy of that book, because he shows how we defended ourselves with the Deacons of Defense in the South. He talks about Robert Williams, Negroes with Guns. But it's a very well-researched book, very well-documented. And, again, when we organize, brother, we certainly can defend ourselves and thrive as a people. But we got to get over that barrier of fear that many of us have and we still operate out of. And Brother Hashim, I submit, Brother Chairman, one reason the question has not been raised by black elected officials or black religious leaders is because they don't even want to shake that tree, brother, because there's so many damn Klansmen, brother. That are involved, that you've known and unknown, they don't even want to shake that tree, brother, because, again, much of our politics is social and symbolic as opposed to substantive politics. So, again, that politics is so much social and symbolic as opposed to any substantive politics. So they ain't even going to raise this question on the Klan. But with you all's help, and if we organize, when we do this final report, we'll raise the question. We ain't going to wait on nobody, no scared to death Negroes, for the liberation of our people. In fact, some of them are actually in the way, brother.
That's real talk. That's real talk. Yes, sir. And so we got a line full of callers, Brother Reginald. If you want to take the callers and get their questions, if you want to keep rolling, however you want to do it.
Okay, well, let me take some calls, brother, and hopefully some of what I said made sense, and I know I tried to cover a lot. I know my time is short, but I wanted to keep my word and give the brothers and sisters some information so throughout the country, throughout the world, in our efforts to organize our people and train our people, let us know that what we're looking at, brother. This didn't just happen by osmosis now. All of a sudden there's a rash of shooting. Hell, there's always been shootings of black people and murder and lynching. And one of the things I'm suggesting, too, yeah, they're shooting, but, brother, do you know that there are hundreds of cases still every year go untalked about and unsolved murder of our people who have actually been lynched from trees. And then they'll talk about suicide in some of these jails, that the brother done committed suicide and all that. But some of these are Klan lynchings again, and we got to look at it. And until we can prove otherwise, then much of this is nothing but Klan activity.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Brother Chairman, your microphone's back open. We're also prepared to go to the phone line.
Brother, you can go right to the phone line. This is very needed, and I know we got a lot of conscious people out there want to add on to the conversation.
Yes, sir. All right. Yes, sir. We'll go to area code 504-432. You're on live with Black Power Radio. Our guest, Dr. Reginald Muhammad, and the new Black Panther Party. Come on in with your question, comment. Welcome, Black Power.
Black Power, Black Power. Brother Reginald, this is what I wanted to ask you. I was they had a program on Wayne Williams about back in the early 80s when the late 70s to the early 80s, a lot of the black children were coming up dead up there in Atlanta. Now, they were saying that they had a Klan group that was actually going out there doing it. I mean, do you know anything about that?
Well, I don't know, but what I'll say is the evidence on Wayne Williams has always been flimsy. And again, if you just look at how some of the murders took place, you'll know that it was been physically impossible. And then even with the forensic, because at that time there was a lack of forensic science and technology going on at that time. So, but I'm saying that should be utilized today to clear Wayne Williams. And I honestly don't think that Wayne Williams committed those murders, brother. And again, the Klan the Klan activity is still heavy in Georgia, outside of Atlanta, Florida, Mississippi. If you'll read the book by, this is a black professor at Florida A&M University, Slavery in Florida. Well, he deals with the Klan and how big and how widespread. Brother, do you know in parts of northern Florida, there were cities, not even, I'm not even talking about Rosewood, but even cities, a couple other cities in Florida where the Klan overran the damn city and ran the officials and ran black people out of certain cities in northern Florida. Yeah. And we're talking about as early as, we're talking about as late as by the mid-90s, no, late 90s, there was a big Klan rally in St. Petersburg and Tampa, Florida. So these are, again, these are people that are still organized. And then, too, you go to certain states, brother, you'll see where the Klan has sponsored road signs on certain highways. They do that. Mm. They will pull permits and rally. And I know that in Texas they're still real heavy. But, brother, there's not one state in the United States that has not been affected. And, again, go back to your original question, Wayne Williams. I really think I have not been able to I got to be able to sit down in the up-and-coming months, and I'll be able to give you a little bit more comprehensive answer about Wayne Williams. But the evidence does not show that Wayne Williams could have possibly committed those murders the way that they were committed and the time frame in which they were committed. And so I'm suggesting, yeah, there was an organized body. To look how long it went on, there had to be people who were involved in law enforcement. There had to be people who had inside information, people who could move around in and out of the community unalarmed and unsuspecting. See, one of the things that happened to us, brother, we'll allow Europeans to move in and out of our community without ever asking them any questions. But if you and I move on, in and out of certain parts of the community, we set tripping with each other and all over the country. So that's a problem. And but I think Wayne Williams, again, is sitting, and I think the case, there have been multiple interviews of Wayne Williams. He still maintains his innocence, and then there's a lot of people, and there are even some, to their credit, there are some black law enforcement don't think that Wayne Williams actually did it. But who's got the balls and enough political tenacity and enough courage to call the question on the Georgia governor and elected officials to reopen the case of Wayne Williams and have an independent investigation and a committee that will rule and decide whether Wayne Williams is innocent or guilty.
I think, Brother Reginald, that the DA, Paul Howard, did open back up that case to look at it, and they did a documentary on it, and it was showing, like you say, with the new forensic science, that some of the murders were impossible for him to do when it came to the carpet fibers and certain things that they tried to use without having the knowledge that they have today. I want to also say, you know, Dr. King said that the Klan was, as you said earlier, you named how many million Klans it was when you got 50 million people in America. He said it ain't the Klan. It's the people that benefit from the Klan. And as we know with our brother Trayvon Martin, and even right there in Ferguson, the minute a white man kills a black man, all of a sudden millions of dollars come from what? Corporations. Who run these corporations? What corporations would bag a murderer? The Klan.
Absolutely.
I mean, the proof is in the pudding. We just going over to wake our people up. We know what's happening. And so these Klans own these corporations. They bag white supremacy with money. And if you kill somebody black, they will come to your support, get you the best law team by the judge, by the jurors, and free you, just like they did in the 1600s, 1700s, 1800s, 1900s, and the 21st century. I'll be quiet, Brother Sean. Who got any other comments?
But thank you for that commentary, brother, because you're absolutely right. You're right on point with that information, brother. Any other questions?
Yes, sir. Caller, thank you so much for that call. Next caller, area code 917-724. 917-724. You're on live with Black Power Radio. Dr. Reginald Muhammad, New Black Panther Party. Come in with your question or comment. Welcome to Black Power.
Yes, how you doing? Being in this conversation, I was on the tram in New York right now. I was on a train earlier, and I got somebody's newspaper. and it showed a black boy with a man all dressed in black, and he cuffed the boy's head. Now I'm yet to look into this. I don't know if Emma has looked into this yet though, but it seems to me it's some sort of retaliation. To me that might have been going too far, but I'm gonna look more into it. But definitely exactly what you're saying, because every time a black man is killed, they definitely get funded. So it's definitely something going on. Like we never really looked into it as a people, what was going on, because they try to cover it up. Like people think the Black Panthers was dead and was gone. The same with the KKK. So that's how they cover it up. But like I appreciate this this sermon right here, because it brought knowledge to us. We definitely appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much, Brother Reginald. Go ahead. Answer that if you can. Thank you, caller.
Oh, I didn't actually hear the question. I heard him make a statement about something happening in New York, and he kind of broke up. I wasn't sure was there a question that he had.
Yeah, I wanted to know if you heard anything about the is a guy dressed in all black, covered his face and everything, and he cut a white boy's head off.
No, I don't know anything about that, brother. I haven't gotten any information about it. You saying this person in all black, was this supposed to be a white boy? Is this a brother? Or I'm not sure.
They don't say who the person in all black is, and then the white boy is pissed off.
Okay, well I haven't heard anything about that, brother. And certainly we're on the public airways, and you know, certain commentary. I wouldn't even address at this point in time, but I don't know anything about that information at all, and so I can't give an intelligent response to it, brother. But if you would, if you can forward us some information about it, or let us know what website we can check that out on, if it's on YouTube, if it's on a particular news site, if you can give that to the people right now, we can certainly check it out, and maybe at some other point in time offer some commentary.
All right, I'll go through my command and send that to you. But like
all
I was
right.
saying, we definitely appreciate you. This was needed. We need to know about this information.
Well, I thank you all for allowing me these few minutes on your airways tonight. I certainly appreciate your ear and your feedback and the information that we're able to disseminate among each other.
All right. Let's take another call in here. Area code 347-596, 347-596. You're on live with Dr. Reginald Muhammad, Black Power Radio, the new Black Panther Party. Talk to us. Your question, your comment. Welcome, Black Power. Last time, caller 347-596. Your mic is open. Moving to 678-650. 678-650. We're live with Dr. Reginald Muhammad, Black Power Radio. Go ahead with your question. Welcome, Black Power.
Black Power.
Peace.
Black Power.
Black Power.
Okay, my question is, what is the best advice you would give to a diminishing black community, you know, to protect themselves and be aware of the Klan that's here? See, because I'm calling out of the Pacific Northwest. I'm in the Seattle chapter.
Okay.
I mean, the Seattle Circle Study Group, we have not built a chapter yet here in Seattle, but you know, we have the Klan here without a doubt. I mean, I've seen them with my own eyes. They do exist here. You know, and we have a diminishing black community here. You know, I mean, we're all spread out. I mean, Seattle is the interracial capital, they say. You know, when a lot of people think that it's not here, you know, what is the best defense mechanism that we have?
I say, brother, and of course Brother Hashim will give you some other points that are applicable to the party in itself from a national standpoint and an international standpoint. But from my vantage point, brother, is that we got to arm ourselves with information and disseminate that information to our people, because the more information you have, the less fear you have about something. Because what our people know about the Klan, brother, they don't know, have a lot of information about it, so they're very fearful of the Klan. So what I'm suggesting, if you disseminate good information to our people, first off, teach them a knowledge of themselves. and that will help lay the base and the foundation. Then give them information, political information about the Klan, and then from that vantage point, start to reach out to different organizations, brother, because everybody may not wear the same label. Excuse me, everybody may not wear the same label, but we have a common objective and a common enemy. And with that in mind, you'll be able to organize, brothers and sisters, in Seattle. There are conscious black people. I've had a chance to be in Seattle, Washington, up at SeaTac up in that area, there, Mount Rainier, all of that up in that area. That is a very beautiful area, but there are conscious black people, and I know they're spread out. But, brother, once we understand and see that we're under assault, even in Seattle, Washington, there are things that are happening in Seattle, Washington with the police and with the Klan and with the big military base there, Fort Lewis in Seattle, Washington there. There are Klansmen on that base. And so I'm suggesting to you is reach out to those brothers and sisters and make sure that they have information. And the more information that you give them, brother, the more you'll see that they'll want to unite with you, because it's nothing like that information, and then it's going to help them overcome their fear, and they're not going to feel isolated if they know other people with like minds who are thinking, who are organizing, and who are training. That's what will help us offset any of the onslaught that will come from the Klan, even in the Seattle area.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Does some of that make sense?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Okay. Information, that's one thing.
I deal with people on a day-to-day, and it seems like they need, you know, a concrete visual at times. I mean, so what should like, you know, I try and get some kind of footage of these guys rallying up, you know, along the shores in the woods, you know, where they like to, you know, have their meetings at or something like that.
Well, absolutely,
I mean,
brother. If that's, but see, one of the things, brother, you know, there are a lot of black people who their job is to study other black people and tell you all of our problems and how we're dysfunctional. Well, that ain't my job. My job is to study white supremacy and white folks at every level. And so with the information, if you got time, brother, start to gather some of that information. I named some of the books and show our people in black and white. And sometimes, as Dr. Collett would tell us, brother, until our people see it in black and white, they may not believe it, brother. So you got to go get some of their scholars and show. And then you got to show the empirical data, and they got to, once they see that, brother, and put all that together, there will be not all of them, brother. Some of them are just going to be too fearful to unite with you. But there will be some that will wake up, and you only need a few, brother, in the study group. You only need a few on the campus. You only need a few in the hood or in the community who with like minds and who with a common objective and who are willing to organize themselves with that information and to defend themselves with that information. And then when the Klan does come, then we're prepared to deal with them.
Yes, sir.
And a lot of times, brother,
I would add to that, we have to study history, like Brother Reginald was saying. Do not think for one minute when those brothers and sisters in Tulsa, Oklahoma got together in 1917, they came together and they claimed a couple of streets, and they had Klan all around them. They had white supremacy all around them in the 1919. They had
white
people coming back from the army starving, hating black folks how they were successful. And they were surrounded in Tulsa, Oklahoma by racism. But they got together and they demanded their piece of land, and they built banks. They built doctor offices. They built insurance companies. And before you know it, we had what we call Black Wall Street. And by 1921, white people were going to Black Wall Street borrowing money. And not just the Klan, but the United States government flew airplanes over the top of Black Wall Street and dropped dynamite on it and bombed it. So my brothers and sisters in 1920 had enough courage in Tulsa, Oklahoma to unite, pull their resources together. Dr. King said before he died in 1967 that we spent $30 billion in 1967. Well, last year we spent over $1 trillion. So if we get our economics together, and economics bring our bank and our insurance companies and our dentist office and our nurseries together. Anytime you bring, you get land and you bring black people together, then we all automatically want to protect what we're doing because history tells us to protect. Then you can legally get your gun clubs like they got all over Seattle. Then you can legally teach armed defense to the women, to the children, how to defend themselves. And when the people start defending themselves, the white man don't attack as easy. Most of the time, the white man always attacks us when we're helpless, defenseless, or scared of him, and we'll run for him. But when he know you willing to take his life, and when he know you willing to use that same Second Amendment, First Amendment, Third Amendment, Fourth Amendment constitutional right that he has, he will bag his ass down. And if he don't, it's just time to get down.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much for your question, Carla. We appreciate you. Stay tuned, all right?
Thank you.
All right. Black Power. Another caller here. Air code 917-873-917-873. You're on live with Black Power Radio. Professor Reginald Muhammad, National Chairman, New Black Panther Party, Hashim Zing and myself. Come in with your question. Welcome, Black Power.
Black Power, Black Power,
go right ahead.
Yes, this is Bubba Supreme from the New York chapter of the New Black Panther Party. I've been listening, you know, the Klan is all over the place, as we know. They're in uniforms, that's their best costume, is what you want to call it. You know, and they're killing our people at an alarming rate. So, you know, this has been going on for over 400 years. So, you know, I mean, the brother that's speaking now is, you know, is very informative, and I'm happy he's on the line giving us this information because we need it. In New York, it's just as bad in New York as it is any other state in the United Snakes of America. So, you know, I just wanted to say that, and I'm going to keep listening. Black Power.
Thank you, Bob. Black Power. Yes, sir. One more caller here. Air code 862-755. 862-755, you're on live. Professor Reginald Muhammad, National Chairman, New Black Panther Party, Hashim Zing and myself. Talk to us. Come in with your question, Black Power.
Black Power, brother.
Black Power, sister, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How y'all doing?
Fine.
All right.
Yes, I wanted to ask the brother a very important question about the Klan and what he thinks about them. Do you believe that the Klan is a blood occult?
Well, I could say in part because some of the symbolism that you see within the Klan, yes, it certainly could be. And remember, it's white folks who are always talking about an organization they disagree with, they call it a cult. But in the real sense, these are the Klan and other European organizations, if you go back and look at their definition, that certainly, yeah, it could be considered a cult. One of the things that I want to say, though, too, is that when you look at white secret societies, and the Klan is one of them, and the evidence showed that at least some of the early Klan's members had gone, you know, were early college students. And you'll see that they have secret handshakes, passwords, and other things. But what they have along with it is that, remember, as a great and ancient African...
Brother, I understand the symbolism of a cult, secret handshakes and stuff. But what I asked you is, do you believe that they are a blood occult, which is kind of different in the sense that if we look at the amount of murders and the blood that has been spilt by the Klan over the years, you could wear a pair of fisherman's boots in it, okay? But if you read a book called ISIS Unveiled by Professor Madam H.P. Blavatsky on science and theology, she speaks specifically of magic and devil occults using blood as a source of bringing about a power of evil. And any time you look at these people, they're constantly making these blood sacrifices. George Bush sacrificed the lives of 3,000 black people in the World Trade Center, blacks and Latinos, which brought him to power for the next 8 years. So when you look at the Klan, and I beg you to understand this, because I am one who does shoot back at the Klan and have shot back at the Klan. I'm from Biloxi, Mississippi, where we believe in shooting back at the Klan. But we know that they institute a certain amount of magic through blood occult and blood letting of black people. And they're not the only ones. The Klan is just a fragment of a larger society called the Illuminati, which was started in 1600 by a bunch of white, I call them demons. They call themselves dukes and duchesses and queens and kings. But they believe in the killing of black people and the spilling of black blood upon the earth. And I know you're Muslim, and I know you read the Quran, and I know you know the conversation between Allah and the devil. And
absolutely.
This is why, yes, you recall it. This is why the Honorable Elijah Muhammad continually called them devils. He never stopped calling them devils, because that's exactly what they are.
Well, sister, I'm not refuting any of your points, and what I will say again, you're right, but I take it further than that, sister. I take it further.